Good morning, Green Bay Packers fans. Welcome to Railbird Central on CheeseheadTV.com. I'm your host, Brian Caribou. Joined this morning by our live blog directors, John Rahor and Jamie Jors. Do we have an issue here with our how the page looks like? Looks like our homepage looks a little unusual today. I'll get working on that. Probably after the show. You'll have to live with it for today. Everything's there, just laid out a little bit differently, so bear with us for one day while we have a little bit of a unusual homepage layout. Anyway, we've got an exciting show for you today. I'm excited to have Chris Brown of smartfootball.com. Chris Brown released his book, The Essential Smart Football, recently. We're going to talk to him about it. Absolutely a fantastic football mind, as you can imagine, with a title like Smart Football. I've asked Chris to contribute to my past magazines at the Maple Street Press Packers Annual. Fortunately, that magazine has now gone out of business, but it was a great run, and what made it such a great magazine was contributors like Chris Brown, who really shed some insight into the X's and O's of football, particularly Packers football. And so we're going to talk to him at 8:45 a.m., not too long, about his book and get a little bit of an idea of what's in it and what Packer fans can take out of it. But really, let's start talking Packers football, because we've got a lot to talk about here. And in fact, on the live blog here, Kyle Cousineau comments, anyone have the post-Dancing with the Stars hangover? So, yes, Donald Driver, the big news from last night, is the winner of Dancing with the Stars, the 2012 season. I don't know, do they have more than one season per calendar year? Might not be the only 2012 season, but anyhow, Donald Driver, the wide receiver, your winner of the Mirror Ball Trophy. Congratulations to Donald Driver. I admit, I probably watched about the last half hour or so of the show last night. So, got to see his cha-cha. Actually, I had a debate about that with my wife last night. Is it the cha-cha or the cha-cha-cha? Because I've seen it referred to as both. But on the show, they actually referred to it three times. Cha-cha-cha. So, I guess that's the way it goes. That's enough debating about that. But Donald Driver, yes, your champion. Congratulations, Donald. Will they put the Mirror Ball Trophy next to the Lombardi Trophies in the Packers Hall of Fame? Is that where it's going to go? I'm sure Donald might keep that on his mantle place for a while. But, I'm not too much of a Dancing with the Stars fan, but as a Packers fan, as a Donald Driver fan, congratulations to him. I know it's big for him. He got into it a lot, got a lot of attention out of it, and that does nothing but good things for the Packers in general, the increased attention. And now this week, Donald Driver will be starting his media blitz, his winner's tour. I'm sure he'll have all sorts of appearances on ABC-owned programming, from Good Morning America to Live with Kelly and probably the ESPN, probably going to go to, I don't know about this. I know he's going to make appearances on like Good Morning America and Live with Kelly and all that. But I'm just wondering, you know, ABC owns ESPN as well. Could he be doing the ESPN, tour where they go to Bristol, Connecticut and appear on every bit of programming from ESPN Radio to SportsCenter to ESPN News, you name it. They hit them all a lot of times. I'm sure you've seen that in the past where a player will head to that area and will appear on every bit of programming they offer there, it seems like. Maybe that's in the works. We'll see. But yeah, so Donald Driver, congratulations. Head coach Mike McCarthy said yesterday, and now really getting into some football, the Packers had their first public practice open to the public and the media of 2012 yesterday. Hit the field for the first time. Well, first time open to the public. They've had practices, but this is the first week of OTAs. And one of the things that came out of it in relation to Donald Driver, head coach Mike McCarthy in his press conference yesterday, said he expects Donald back in Green Bay next week. Donald Driver was the only player not to attend OTAs yesterday. You know, I'm not so sure that that was the same case with, you know, phase one and phase two of the off-season workouts, in which phase one is really only strength and conditioning, and phase two just, you know, gone to individual position workouts. But now that it's phase three, really good sign for the Packers that the whole team is there, with the exception of Donald Driver. But he's expected back next week. So, I mean, they could have full participation, or at least maybe not participation, full attendance in Green Bay by next week. So that's a good thing. I mean, there was, you know, several players sat out of yesterday's session, including Charles Woodson, you know, veteran. He's one of the guys who in the past has sat out OTAs from time to time. And you know, given his experience in the NFL, 10 plus years, over a decade's worth of experience, it's no wonder. And I think he, you know, really doesn't have to be practicing necessarily during this OTA portion of the year of the NFL schedule. But he was there at least. You know, he's attending meetings, things like that. So, you know, it's, he's there, and attendance is great. And, you know, that's kind of been a sticking point in the past. The Packers have always actually had pretty good attendance, in part because of they do things like work bonuses into their contract by working bonuses into their contract in which they, you know, they get paid for attending workouts like this. And that helps people come, like Charles Woodson, you know, because he might have a bonus in his contract where he'll get paid for attending these workouts. Well, there you go. I mean, it's he's getting paid to be there. I mean, that's why he's showing up. So that's really great to have, you know, with the exception of Donald Driver, everybody there. I mean, that really speaks to, I think, the what the Packers are doing as an organization, how they work those bonuses into the contract, what the players think of the coaching staff, and then the veterans on the team who kind of set the tone, and maybe, you know, whether it's leading by example or leading vocally and encouraging their teammates to come, whatever method works. I mean, it's great all around. Everybody's there. They're all working out. And yesterday was the first time the rookies were working with the rest of the team. You know, I think one of the big stories to come out of yesterday's, you know, OTA practice was that Clay Matthews was working over at right outside linebacker while new first-round draft choice Nick Perry was working on the left. And, you know, we kind of saw that coming. It was, you know, right away we saw that, you know, Nick Perry's working on the left side during the rookie minicamp two-plus weeks ago, and kind of saw the writing on the wall. But it was confirmed yesterday when Clay Matthews moved back to the right outside linebacker spot where he was his rookie season in the NFL. So kind of showing the impact some of the rookies are having on the team already, or at least the impact the coaches are having in moving these rookies and other players around to accommodate them. You know, Jarrell Worthy getting a lot of playing time with the nickel package right off the bat as well, it looks like. So exciting times in Green Bay. So the Packers are, you know, hitting the practice field for the first time. It's one of those things where you kind of step back right now and wonder and look at where the Packers are at. They're at a time period where, right now, where they're putting last season behind them and looking ahead right now, fixing the errors of last season, obviously wanting to fix the deficiencies on defense, and looking ahead this year to improving that. So that's where they're at currently right now. And it's exciting to talk about what they're doing on the football field. In fact, one of the best articles that came out of the media yesterday, as it is the first time they were able to cover the team, the full team, in a practice session this year as well, came from Ty Dunn at the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel about backup quarterback Graham Harrell and how dedicated he has been this past season or this off season to his training regimen, putting on weight, putting on 14 pounds, working a lot on his strength, particularly his shoulders, which has in turn helped improve his arm strength, or at least according to the quarterback himself. But it really was an impressive, again, you're kind of getting a biased view here from Graham Harrell and his trainer if you read that. But that's impressive. That's impressive. I mean, he appears to be taking this very seriously. And there's an opening here at the backup quarterback spot. So really interesting. I want to come back to that. But we're going to take a break here briefly to talk to Chris Brown of smartfootball.com and his new book, The Essential Smart Football. So let me just take a very brief break here, get Chris on the line, and we'll be right back shortly, talk about this book, and then after that, getting back to some more Packers talk as they practiced yesterday. Hang with us. Welcome back to Railbird Central on CheeseheadTV.com. I'm Brian Kiravu, and joining us right away, right here on the phone, we have the author of The Essential Smart Football, Chris Brown, joining us. Chris, how are you doing today?
Doing awesome. Thanks so much for having me on.
No problem. We're glad to have you. Chris just released his new book here, and what I want to start off with here, Chris, is could you tell us a little bit about your background and maybe how the book came about from that? So go ahead and tell us a little bit about that.
Sure. Well, obviously, like most people, I've loved football for a long time. I grew up playing sort of during college and after college, I spent some time in the coaching business, while I was in college doing sort of volunteer stuff at high schools, and then sort of moved up the ranks pretty well within the high school level in Indiana. But I decided to sort of go do other things. And I'm talking to you today from New York, where I'm an attorney doing deal work. But I always sort of had a love of the game, and I had made a lot of contacts in the coaching industry, a lot of great contacts. And so I started doing Smart Football. It was really a website in various iterations, probably like 7 years ago, but really probably more intently 5 years ago at smartfootball.com. And I've been very fortunate to sort of pull together resources from coaching buddies and sort of stuff I study from game film or just even, rewatching TV stuff and analyzing the game. And really the whole point of it was always to write the stuff I wanted to read. I wanted to know, not just why a guy scored a touchdown, but what was the actual pass play they used? Or, you watch the defense gets burned and the TV camera does a big close-up on some defensive back. Well, maybe it wasn't even his fault. Maybe they actually were in a different coverage scheme and it was really the safety's responsibility and they missed that. And I think as great as football the coverage is, there are a lot of gaps there, and that was the stuff I really wanted to read. Started writing about it, years ago, and then in the last few years it was picked up to where we just have the New York Times, Yahoo Sports, and then I'm now a feature contributor to Grantland, Bill Simmons' ESPN project, and that's been a great opportunity. So I had sort of kicked around book ideas, and I've got some plans to do stuff in the future, but I get questions all the time of where do I begin to learn more about the game? Sort of where do you start? What are sort of the key things you need to know? And combination of having a lot of material that I had been working on and was looking for a home for, and then also taking some of sort of my greatest hits from the last few years and wanting to edit them, retool them, expand them, and sort of put it together in a real compilation book. It was the genesis of the idea, and then just been pursuing it in the last few months. And we came out a couple weeks ago, and right now we're still the number one football book on Amazon.
Oh, that's fantastic. And you've done fantastic work for us in the past at Maple Street Press when I was the editor of their Packers annual. And I just wanted to tell you that, Chris, and appreciate that. But let's get into the book and its contents a little bit. What's in it, Chris? What are readers going to find in the book itself when they read it, open it?
Well, as I said, it's sort of a compilation work. So you've got, you know, I guess 15 to 20 individual essays broken into sections. You know, I begin with sort of characters, then I go to history, and then some more theory stuff, and then concepts, which is sort of meat and potatoes, like, you know, here's a play, there's a play kind of stuff, but within the structure of a narrative. And then the subjects range over, it's probably, I would rough numbers, half college football, half pro football, but you know, if you read them, what you'll realize is that there's a ton of overlap. There's more overlap than I think people realize when you're just talking schemes between college and pros. Obviously, I've got chapters on, like, Urban Meyer and sort of the spread offense stuff, but, you know, I would argue that the NFL has become a spread offense league in every way except the mobile quarterback. And it's a whole other discussion whether that will ever take the place, but, you know, you look at the Packers. I mean, they're essentially a 3-4-5 wide receiver team. And then also on defense, you know, Don Capers, when he's got the players, uses, you know, 5-6, sometimes 7 defensive backs and some of those funky sort of psycho fronts where they've only got one defensive tackle and then everybody else is moving around and standing around. So from there, though, I've got a lot of, you know, NFL content. I've got a chapter in there about sort of the evolution of the zone blitz, you know, through the eyes of Don Capers and Dick LeBeau and how they kind of batted it back and forth for the last 25 years, sort of making the zone blitz sort of the du jour, the featured sort of defensive scheme. And then I've got a lot of passing game stuff that touches on some of what the Packers have done previously. I've got a chapter, it's actually on Michigan, the University of Michigan's offense, but it's the evolution of the West Coast offense to sort of more, you know, one back spread principles, and a couple of the concepts to talk about there are actually very much like sort of the evolution of the Packers offense. If you go back from to Mike Holmgren to what Mike McCarthy's doing now, I actually use a concept that was really Brett Favre's probably his best passing play when Mike Holmgren could get him to follow the progression, which was what they call the Texas concept, which is if you ever go back and watch those 1990s games of the Packers versus the Tony Dungy, Tampa Bay, Bucks, the Tampa 2, you know, that they would send the tight end down the middle and then that fullback would run a little angle route underneath. And the whole thing was just high-lowing that middle linebacker and seeing if he dropped back for the tight end, you drop it off to the fullback, and then you hit the tight end later. And Holmgren's thing was, you know, you got to just keep hitting the tight end 5 or 6 times, and that's when the middle linebacker comes up, and then you hit the tight end deep down the middle. And usually Brett only wanted to throw it to the fullback once or twice. But then you'll see that that's evolved into sort of more spread stuff where, and I actually talk about it, the Colts run a similar concept, the levels concept, where, you know, the tight end runs a square in over the middle, and then a sort of a slot receiver runs, or an outside receiver runs a quick 5-yard in, and it's the exact same stretch where you high-low the linebacker. So you'll see stuff like that. You'll also see more things along the lines of, you know, the history of sort of how schemes or how defenses or offenses have, you know, come in vogue, come out of vogue, sort of going principles going back 40, 50 years, but then how you still see traces of it in the game today. So just trying to cover a lot of territory in a very concise, elegant way, hopefully elegant way.
I'm glad you joined us today because I've sought your insight on the past about the possibility that the Packers could run some sort of hybrid 4-3-3-4 defense this year. And the inspiration for that actually came from one of your articles on the New England Patriots and what they do with their defense. And you included that in the book as well about the War Daddies, Vince Wilfork. Can you talk a little bit about, you know, that Patriots defense and you know, its inclusion in the book as well?
Sure. And I think also more generally, the last couple of years, probably what people would say, other than maybe just general being more pass happy and maybe more spread formations, I'd say that the big sort of trend you hear about on the talk shows about the NFL are the rise of these hybrid tight end type guys. Michael Finley obviously being a perfect example of a guy who can be a tight end, he can be a receiver, he's big, he's a mismatch problem. You also hear about space guys like Darren Sproles, but who can run and catch. The idea being hybrid type offensive players who can do lots of things. And I think that the I think, you know, my prediction is what you're going to hear for the next couple years is that same narrative, but on defense. You're going to be hearing more about outside linebackers who are kind of linebacker safeties. They might be playing deep, might be playing man coverage on those tight ends, or they might just be run fit defenders, stuff, you know, taking on fullbacks. You'll see a lot of defensive ends who are really linebacker defensive ends, especially for traditional 4-3 teams. They're going to just start putting those guys on the field because they need a guy who can rush the passer, take on a block, and drop in the flat for on a zone blitz. And so I think the Packers, and we've talked a little bit about this, and I'm not actually the expert on exactly who they've picked up this year, but I see them, like a lot of teams, sticking with sort of the base defenses they've gone to, but seeing how the personnel within that evolves. So you're not just picking up, you know, the traditional defensive end or the traditional outside linebacker. You're picking a guy who was maybe a couple years ago considered a tweener and maybe wouldn't even have a great roster spot. But now, because offenses like Tom Brady's or Aaron Rodgers', they're going no huddle. You can't substitute. One time, you know, JerMichael Finley lines up as a tight end, another time he lines up as a receiver. You need a guy who can do all of those things at once and keep you sound. And I think that that's going to be a big trend. The Patriots are kind of a different case, though I could see Capers using some of those concepts where, you know, typically a defense, when you design your front, you know, you're usually you're either a one gap or a two gap defense, meaning that you have to account for every gap on defense for a run play. And it gets a little more complicated because if you insert like a fullback as a lead blocker, he creates a gap. If you pull a lineman from the backside, he eliminates a gap from the backside, but then creates a new one on the front side. So a lot of run game strategy is really complicated, actually. It's not just about running right or left because you're all about, you know, where's that new gap going to be? Well, we have to be gap sound. Well, what if they bring a guy here? And so most 3-4 defenses traditionally were older sort of two-gap defenses where the defensive lineman would take on a blocker and he's responsible for either gap on either side of them based on where the lineman wanted to go, and then the linebackers would fit based on that. The move for the last really 15 years, going back to Jimmy Johnson's Cowboys defenses and even his defenses at Miami, were fast 4-3 one-gap defenses where you told a guy, you've got that gap, hit it as fast as you can, penetrate, and we're going to make sure every gap is accounted for, but you're only responsible for the one. What Belichick does, both out of necessity because you know they had a lot of weaknesses on that defense, but then also because they had Vince Wilfork in the middle, they could actually play both schemes at the same time. Where they put Wilfork in the middle, he's two gapping, and everyone on one side of the ball is two gapping, and everyone on the other is one gapping. And you do that just to sort of get extra guys in the run game, but then have extra defenders in the passing game or in the secondary that you wouldn't have had if you were trying to use a total one gap scheme. And it also lets you kind of go back and forth between the 4-3 and the 3-4. Back and forth.
Very interesting. And Chris, I know you're not like, you don't follow the Packers specifically. You're not a beat writer for them. But I got to tell you, that in the NFL draft this year, you know, the Packers under Dom Capers, you know, kind of this 3-4 defense, the players they drafted were almost more suited for a 4-3. They drafted Nick Perry, this defensive end from USC, who's going to play outside linebacker in a 3-4. They drafted defensive lineman Jarrell Worthy of Michigan State, Mike Daniels of Iowa, almost these one-gapping sort of defensive linemen, and it almost doesn't fit what Dom Capers is going to do. Does this lend any credence to the fact that there's kind of change in the cards coming to Green Bay?
It very well might, and it also just might be, you know, a recognition that, as I was saying with these hybrid guys, you look at the stats for NFL teams, and you just don't play your base defense that much. You know, one of the biggest head-scratcher picks in the first round of the draft was the Seahawks pick Bruce Irvin out of West Virginia, who is really a specialist. All he does is rush the passer. He runs like a 4-4. He's a defensive end, so he's very good at that. But he's not, you don't want him in there taking on, fullbacks and tackles in the run game. And Pete Carroll is a great, 4-3 coach. I know him and Capers have shared ideas over the years. And that may be a terrible draft pick, I don't know, but it does reflect the recognition that, hey, we're going to be in kind of nickel sets, and we're going to be rushing the passer, and we're going to need a lot of these kind of guys down in and down out. And I think that's also, to some extent, what it seems to me that Capers and the Packers front office were trying to do is, to something that take the best available. If a guy is just really a pass rusher or really a one-gap guy, we have to shore up the defense, and we're going to spend so much time in these other kind of funky fronts, and we're going to be spending so much time blitzing that we're not going to necessarily need the big-bodied two-gap players. And the other thing being that there's, given the nature of offenses in college ball, defenses have already been moving to those hybrid, the fast guys, and even some more one-gap just to keep it simple. So, just statistically, there may not be as many of those kind of like a two-gap defensive end, a nose tackle. You might even be able to find more than a two-gap defensive end, which is kind of a unique breed who has to do a lot of different things.
Yes. Chris, how can our viewers, our listeners here, get your book, The Essential Smart Football?
Well, it's available on my website, smartfootball.com. It's available on amazon.com. Right now it's available in paperback. It will be available on Kindle. It should be by Monday or so. You just, go there and type in smart football or essential smart football. It's on barnesandnoble.com, and pretty much anywhere you go to buy a book, it should be there.
Chris, we appreciate you joining us on the show today, taking time out of your day to talk to us. Very unique stuff. It's great. I've had a chance to look at it. And again, thank you for joining us.
Hey, thank you for having me on.
All right. Take care. Chris Brown of smartfootball.com, author of The Essential Smart Football, joining us here on Railbird Central on CheeseheadTV.com. Great to talk some X's and O's. Great to talk just football in general. And if you're a football fan, don't be confused. Oh, this book is not about the Packers, specifically. There's mentions, as Chris said, quite a few about, the influence the Packers have had on the X's and O's of football, both on the offensive side and the defensive side, which is great. But I mean, it's not specifically about the Packers, but I mean, if you're a football fan, it is great stuff. I mean, you're interested in the history, the evolution of football, things like that. I highly suggest getting it. There's a lot of forms, he said, whether you're a digital Kindle reader or you want the hard paperback copy, it's there to, and you can get anything you want. And so again, thanks for Chris Brown for joining us on the show today. I'm seeing right now on our live blog, it looks as if Nick Hill, quarterback Nick Hill, has been cut by the Packers this morning. And again, I'm not sure, has this been reported by anybody? I see we have a tweet or something like that, and I'm not even sure. I don't have Twitter up right now on my laptop here in front of me. Has this been reported by anyone, or is it we just have a tweet here? Is this official, or where is it coming from? So quarterback Nick Hill apparently, reportedly, allegedly, without corroboration here, reacting to the news that Nick Hill has been cut by the Green Bay Packers. So, Nick Hill was brought in on chance, on a whim, this offseason, an Arena League quarterback, the Packers hoping to, find a diamond in the rough. And he was signed right after the season ended about, we're talking the February time frame. where off-season rosters are, you know, you go from 53 as soon as the season ends, and your season ends, and you can sign players, and you can sign up to 80 players, and now 90. It was 80 at the time, then they expanded the rosters. So they took a chance, just like, hey, this is the best quarterback in arena football. Let's give him a shot. Let's see what he's got. We've got room if we need him. He's not, you know, going to take a spot away from somebody else. But now that OTAs have started, they've had a little bit of a chance here to see Nick Hill, in the room and, you know, both in the, you know, in the classroom environment and now yesterday on the practice field. And I'm sure they've seen him in the practices that haven't been open to the public or reporters and things like that. Just things, you know, during the IPW's individual positional workouts, they probably seen, I'm guessing that, you know, he probably just doesn't have what it takes to be an NFL quarterback. Maybe the arm strength isn't there. I don't really know. I haven't seen him myself, so it's hard for me to pass any sort of widespread judgment here. But it's just interesting that it kind of comes down today at a point when, you know, the Packers, they're not going to make too many roster moves between now and the end of training camp. At least the beginning of training camp, until they start actually cutting players to get down to 53 again. They kind of take what they have and you know, let them battle throughout training camp. But I'm sure they saw that, you know, he just probably isn't good enough for the NFL. And that's nothing against Nick Hill. I mean, he obviously here one of the best quarterbacks in Arena League football and can go back there and maybe win a championship there. So, who knows? Maybe all of a sudden rookie B.J. Coleman comes in and he's so impressive that, you know, the Packers feel good with him as kind of the third or maybe even the top backup. Graham Harrell comes in after an impressive training this offseason, stronger, heavier. Maybe these guys impress just so much that there's not really room for Nick Hill, and maybe the Packers didn't want to take four quarterbacks the rest of the offseason. They want to give these reps to Graham Harrell and B.J. Coleman. I don't know, you know, just speculation, but these are all possibilities that the Packers may have been, gone into their thought process as they make this roster move today. I see some questions here the safety position on the live blog from Bill Larson. So how worried is everybody about the loss of Nick Collins? From Kevin Lamb, does anybody know why Pepra did not practice yesterday? And I might just refer both of you and all our listeners, in fact, to an article I wrote on CheeseheadTV.com about the safety position, about what, you know, what's happening there at the position, from the loss of Nick Collins and yesterday MD Jennings actually working with the starters yesterday. Go check that article out. I know the homepage is taken over at the moment while we're live with Railbird Central, but after we're done, you can actually find it through the archives on the site. But yeah, so I wrote an article about what's happening. Charlie Pepra said in an interview with DoorCountyNews.com during the tailgate tour, of course, Pepra was on the tailgate tour all last week, went around the state. He said he had a sore knee, didn't really elaborate. But he said he has a sore knee. I don't really know where that came from, why he's hurt. I'm doubting it's anything serious. The Packers it obviously didn't happen last year during a game, or at least I'm not privy to it if it did. But, I'm just assuming it's probably nothing too serious. I'm assuming the Packers just erring on the side of caution, not going to have Pepper practice. But, I mean, because he would obviously be, now that Nick Collins is gone, unfortunately, he would be the starter, at least to begin with, before anybody perhaps took over. But this has opened the door, both the loss of Collins and Pepper, at least temporarily, opened the door for a guy like MD Jennings to practice with the starters yesterday. Anthony Levine, a practice squad player, getting some playing time. And then the rookies, fourth round draft choice, Jerron McMillian, undrafted rookie, Sean Richardson. all getting increased playing time because of these reasons. And who knows what's going to happen? Bill Larson asking, are we worried about the loss of Nick Collins? Yeah, I mean, it's a little bit scary. It's a little bit scary. You just got to hope these young guys, or at least one of them, they don't all have to be amazing. Just who's ever going to be in the starting lineup has to be good, you know? So hopefully one of these guys, you know, stands out, or Charlie Pepper really improves. Charlie Pepper talked about on the tailgate tour when he was getting some, you know, publicity for being part of that and being interviewed, you know, saying he hopes he makes the Pro Bowl and is going to try his best to do that. And, you know, if you're Charlie Pepper, why would you say anything different? He's taking a good attitude towards it. I personally have my doubts whether he can be a Pro Bowl player, but that isn't to knock him for saying that's his goal and he's going to strive to do that. I hope every player says that. But realistically, from what I've seen in the past, I'm not sure Charlie Pepper is in that category. I hope he is. I wish him the best. Prove me wrong. I'll cheer for you, Charlie. Honestly, I want you to be that. I'm just not sure it is. So show it. Show it. Get healthy and show it. You're going to need to get healthy. You're not going to want these young guys to be passing you up. Like MD Jennings. I mean, it's far too early right now to put anything into, you know, how these young guys are going to do, whether it's Jennings, Levine, McMillian, etc., how they're going to replace. I mean, you just kind of continue to watch their progress over the course of OTAs, minicamp, stuff like that. But anyhow, we've already gone long past 9 o'clock, in which, you know, is usually our deadline for a Railbird Central. Being a podcast, we kind of frequently have a loose, you know, end time to this show. But anyhow, it is a great show today to talk about this stuff, talk about practice, and have Chris Brown, a smart football author of The Essential Smart Football, joining us on the show today. Glad to have him with us. So thank you, everybody, for joining us today. We'll be back on Friday. Once again, stay tuned for coverage all week long, as usual, here at Cheesehead TV. On behalf of Jamie George, John Rahor, I'm Brian Kirivu. We'll see you later, everyone. I leave you today with a song called Valley of the Jig by String Cheese Incident on Psy Fidelity Records. See everyone. Go Pack, go.